Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, December 5th. I'm Dagna, your reader today. We'll begin with today's mini editorial, which was written by Randall Washburn from Sioux City. And Randall writes, "So nepotism has left the University of Iowa with a football offense that can't score and a quarterback who is awful. What a display of squandering taxpayer money. Fire the offensive coordinator, quarterback, coach, and his boss. Oh, I mean his daddy." Again, this was written by Randall Washburn of Sioux City. And now we'll have the Siouxland's five-day forecast beginning with today, which will have a high of 42 and a low of 23 and plenty of sunshine. Wednesday will be breezy in the morning with a high of 53 and a low of 31. Thursday will be mostly sunny and mild with a high of 58 and a low of 35. Friday will be cooler and breezy in the afternoon with a high of 48 and a low of 26. And Saturday will also be breezy with sun and clouds with a high of 41 and a low of 19. We'll now read the first front page stories. And our first one is from Dolly Butts of the Sioux City Journal with the headline of City Council Moves Forward Headington Park Splash Pad Project. The Sioux City Council, during its weekly meeting on Monday, unanimously approved plans, specifications, form of contract, and estimated cost for construction of the Headington Park Splash Pad Project. Before the vote, Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore said he was contacted by property owners about the availability of parking when the splash pad is up and running. He said they also wondered what type of security would be required for the splash pad. Parks and Recreation Manager Angel Wallace asked if the residents want her department to look into security cameras or police patrol. "Probably both," Moore responded. Mayor Bob Scott asked Wallace if water lines will be run for a future bathroom facility. Wallace said she did not know the answer to that. "That's really important to me," Scott said. "I don't think it's fair that we do these deals in some neighborhoods. It's a fairness issue. We do these things in neighborhoods, and then all of a sudden, some have bathrooms and some don't. I want to make sure we have future plans." The city's consultant's estimated cost for the project is $400,000. JEO Consulting Group, Inc. of South Sioux City completed the plans and specifications for the project at the park at 2951 Isabella Street. The project includes new construction of a splash pad and general site work, earthwork, sodding, sidewalk construction, and concrete slabs, according to city documents. The documents state that the project will include bid alternate 1 for exterior benches around the splash pad and bid alternate 2 for the installation of umbrella structures around the splash pad's exterior. The project was originally bid on April 18th, but no bids were received. City staff worked with JEO to modify the scope of the project to extend the completion date and remove the splash pad's features to be bid separately. Sioux City Parks and Recreation Director Matt Salvatore previously told the Journal that he thinks the lack of bids and high construction costs for recreational projects are due to the American Rescue Plan Act funds that have flooded the market. The project was rebid on August 8th. Christensen Construction Company of Pender, Nebraska submitted the sole bid as $755,000. Since Christensen's bid was well above the estimated cost of $400,000, the council voted to reject it. During its November 20th meeting, the council voted to adopt the plans, specifications, form of contract, and estimated cost for the splash pad. Rebidding the project includes the removal of the precast building and its foundation. Bids will be received on December 19th. The project, which is expected to be fully completed by October 15, 2024, will be funded with general obligation bonds and covered under the Capital Improvement Plan's Aquatic Comprehensive Plan, which has a total budget of $559,968.38, according to the documents. Salvatore told the Journal that residents living in the neighborhood requested the splash pad at Headington Park. The city currently has 5 splash pads, which can be operated longer than the swimming pools. The splash pads are open for Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend daily from 10 a.m. until 8 p.m. In addition to those splash pads, the city also has a new water feature at Chris Larson Park's Floyd Plaza. Mists and fountains rise up from the ground with a push of a button. The fountain is operational during park hours 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. Our next story is written by Mason Doctor of the Sioux City Journal. Headline is Search for Missing Iowa Trucker Paused. Sac City. The Louisiana-based nonprofit group that has been searching for missing Wall Lake, Iowa truck driver David Schultz said Sunday night that they may have exhausted any potential search locations in the area. In a Facebook post, the United Cajun Navy said they also have started raising funds for a reward to help locate Schultz, 53, who vanished 2 days before Thanksgiving. A married father of 10-year-old twin boys, Schultz was last heard from in the early morning hours November 21st, according to the Lakeview Police Department. He was scheduled to pick up a load of baby pigs at a confinement near Eagle Grove, Iowa, and then deliver them to a farm near Sac City. His semi-trailer truck was found in the afternoon of November 21st, northeast of Sac City, parked on northbound U.S. Highway 71 near its intersection with U.S. Highway 20. The truck was reportedly turned off, but it was not pulled completely off the side of the road. The pigs also were still in the trailer. More than 100,000 acres in the vicinity of his route have been searched, according to a United Cajun Navy Facebook post on Sunday. The search began in Sac County and was later expanded to Calhoun, Webster, and Wright counties since his disappearance 2 weeks ago. Hundreds of volunteers have turned out, with many bringing along horses or all-terrain vehicles to cover more ground. Searches may resume as early as Wednesday, but we need a few days to step back and find any information and work with law enforcement to find any more designated search areas, United Cajun Navy Midwest team leader Jake Raleigh said in the Facebook post Sunday night. Raleigh said the group has started working with a local bank and other local businesses to try to put together a substantial reward fund as possible to try and bring new information to David's disappearance. The campaign is called Make Them Squeal, a name suggested by Schultz's wife, Sarah. Multiple law enforcement agencies have been involved in the investigation into David Schultz's disappearance, including the Sac County Sheriff's Office, the Lakeview Police Department, and the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. And the next story is also by Dolly Butts, and the headline is Cook Park Raises Concerns. Monique Scarlett, who grew up on Sioux City's west side, does not want Cook Park to be left behind. Scarlett said the park, 505 Market Street, used to be a place where families could swim all day at the pool, which closed for good in 2016, or host a barbecue. Today, she described Cook Park as a little tent city or area for homeless encampments, which are commonplace in larger metropolitan areas. Scarlett said, "You're seeing more homemade tents going up and people living there or sleeping there. Of course, in the summer, it's really become a concern." She wants Cook Park to receive equal treatment to the city's other parks. Scarlett thinks Cook Park should have amenities such as a picnic shelter, park benches, electricity, and splash pad features similar to the city's other parks. She also wants Cook Park to receive the same amount of care or maintenance. Scarlett, founder of the Unity in the Community, raised the issue during a city council meeting earlier this year. Unity in the Community holds an annual block party at the park to mark Juneteenth and brings citizens together with local officials, law enforcement officers, and faith leaders. "I just think Cook Park is an afterthought. You go over there and it's never cleaned up. The grass isn't mowed properly or half mowed," said Scarlett, who noted the park isn't the only place individuals experiencing homelessness congregate in the city. She said she sees them downtown, on Nebraska Street by the warming shelter, and in Riverside and Leif Erickson parks too. "You can't just say that Cook Park is where they're going, because they're going everywhere. Wherever they can lay down and make camp, that's where they are at." On a recent Monday morning at Cook Park, a bright pink City of Sioux City notice dated October 6th warned that all personal items, clothing, food, trash, shelters, building materials, furnishings, transportation, needed to be removed by 8 a.m. The notice was affixed to a metal post near the park's restroom building, which had been spray-painted with graffiti. Behind Lamb Arts, a theater adjacent to the park, clothing, boots, bedding, and other belongings were scattered on the ground. "That's our primary issue at Cook, at the riverfront, and at Mid-City Park. Our unhoused population utilizing the public free spaces," Parks and Recreation Manager Angel Wallace said. "There's not that many service agencies that provide them with resources to stay during the day. We just happen to be the most conducive location." From November 1st, 2022 to November 14th, 2023, Sioux City Police were dispatched to the park 113 times, roughly triple the calls logged at two other downtown area parks. Officers responded to the Missouri Riverfront's Chris Larson Park 36 times and Mid-City Park at 801 Court Street 33 times over that same time period, according to statistics provided by the police department. "Most of the calls out there were for disturbances. It looks like most of those were transient type of people fighting," Community Policing Sergeant Tom Gill said of the calls to Cook Park. Gill said 32 of the calls were disturbances. He said 9 different assault reports were taken at the park, which was also the site of a stabbing. He said 3 public intoxication and 2 drug arrests were made at the park. 2 robbery reports and 1 burglar report were also tallied over that roughly 1-year time frame, according to Gill. "It looks like the rest of those 113 calls were people they wanted removed. There have been a couple check welfares for suicidal subjects," he said. During the June 12th City Council meeting, Scarlett told council members she needs their support to revitalize Cook Park. Scarlett expressed disappointment that all electricity had been gutted from the park and that a picnic shelter, which was removed when Girls Inc. building was constructed, was never replaced. She also suggested benches be added to the park near soccer and basketball areas. Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore called Scarlett's request reasonable and thanked her for bringing it to the council's attention. Cook Park came up again during the council's November 13th meeting as Frank Brianzo was interviewing for the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board. Councilman Matthew O'Kane asked Brianzo what he thinks the future of Cook Park looks like. "I think that's a huge problem," Brianzo said. "I guess they have to shut the bathrooms. There's a lot of illegal things going on after 11 o'clock there at night. There doesn't seem like there's a great deal of enforcement." Mayor Bob Scott remarked that a lot of cities larger than Sioux City have transit or park police. He said he recognizes the city doesn't have the money for that, but said it's still something that needs to be looked at. "I think you actually need a park police or 5 police officers in the parks. I'm sorry, they can't be part of the police department," he said. "When you're down 9 of 10 police officers for sick leave, military leave, being involved in shooting incidents, all those sort of things really cut the manpower." Sioux City Parks and Recreation Director Matt Salvatore told the Journal the city has noticed an increase in homeless individuals camping in the city's parks, but not necessarily an uptick in crime. He said Cook and Mid-City are the parks where the city is having issues right now. "We have heard concerns about both those parks," said Salvatore, who noted that camping is not allowed in open green spaces in the parks, which close daily at 9 p.m. When an encampment in a park is discovered, Salvatore said his department posts a notice warning that all personal items not removed within 24 hours will be disposed of. "Then we do a cleanup of the area and remove the belongings if they're still there. We do that with police present. Enforcement can be hard at times." Anytime a homeless encampment is removed, neighborhood service manager Jill Wanderscheid said individuals involved are given her department's contact information. "We do have a lot of people that are referred to us. We help them get on our coordinated entry list and make sure that they're getting services that they're entitled to," Wanderscheid said. Since December 1, 2022, Outreach Supervisor Clara Coley said Neighborhood Services has completed 419 coordinated entry intakes for individuals or families staying in a shelter or a place not meant for human habitation. As of November 14th, she said 165 households were on the waiting list for federally funded housing assistance. However, Coley said some individuals on the list become frustrated due to the length of time they have to wait for housing. She said some people with substance use and mental health issues find the shelter environment chaotic and would rather stay outside. Wallace said Cook Park's restrooms had to be locked throughout most of the summer months in effort to prevent vandalism and destruction. She said city staff are looking into ordinance changes that would create stricter enforcement at the parks, especially during the evening hours. We cannot necessarily restrict homeless people from being in the parks during the daytime because they're open public spaces. But to enforce when there's public intoxication, when there's vandalism, when there's harassment, those type of incidents were kind of firming up, Wallace explained. We can either give notices to people when there's inappropriate behaviors or being aggressive and causing disruption in the parks during the daytime. Scarlett thinks Cook Park holds a lot of potential. She believes making simple improvements to the park will restore pride in that area of the city. I just think that we need to have more care for Cook Park and that we just need to do the common sense fixes and take care of it, she said. And then we work together to fix the homeless situation. South Sioux City man dies awaiting trial for murder in Utah. Salt Lake City. A South Sioux City man charged with a decades-old homicide has died while awaiting trial in Utah. Brian Reed, 58, died September 30th while in custody in Salt Lake City. He had been scheduled to stand trial there on December 11th on charges of second-degree murder and aggravated burglary for a 1982 death. The Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office confirmed Reed's death, but a spokeswoman said he could not provide information on the cause. A spokeswoman for the Utah Department of Health and Human Services said she was unable to discuss details of Reed's death because Utah law prohibits the release of autopsy findings to the media. She referred questions back to law enforcement. A judge dismissed the case on October 17th. Reed was arrested in December 2019 in connection with the death of Wilhelmina Reed, 72, who was found dead in her Salt Lake City home on August 18, 1982. An autopsy determined she died of multiple blunt force trauma injuries to her head. Investigators reviewing the case in 2018 noted that Reed was among people listed in an initial canvas of neighbors who were never interviewed by police. Reed, who was 17 at the time, lived with his mother across the street from Reed. That's where I was getting confused. The victim's last name is Reed, R-E-I-D, and the man who was accused of her murder is Reed, R-E-E-D. So Reed, who was 17 at the time, lived with his mother across the street from the victim, Reed, and left for Nebraska the day of her death. Reed's mother told investigators that she had bought her son's ticket prior to Reed's death. Salt Lake City police investigators first interviewed Reed in South Sioux City on December 18, 2018, and South Sioux City police investigators collected DNA samples from him. An analysis of DNA taken from the women's nightgown showed that Reed was a possible contributor, and a fingerprint lifted from the scene was identified as Reed's, according to court documents. Salt Lake City investigators then conducted a second interview with Reed and gained an admission, South Sioux City police said in a December 2019 news release. Reed waived his extradition in January 2020 and was returned to Utah, where he pleaded not guilty and had remained in custody while awaiting trial. Now we move to a political story. New Trump ad highlights Reynolds' past praise. Former President Donald Trump's campaign launched a six-figure ad buy in Iowa with 6 weeks to go until the first in the nation Iowa Republican caucuses on January 15th. The ads come as the Republican presidential frontrunner ramps up his appearances and his campaign's caucus turnout efforts in Iowa as he looks to solidify his lead over the 2024 GOP field and fend off his rivals in the state that will kick off the presidential nominating contest. One of the ads totes Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds' past praise of Trump. The TV spot features a montage of Reynolds applauding Trump and his administration's policies at previous rallies. While Reynolds supported Trump during his previous presidential bids, their relationship has soured after Trump took shots at Reynolds over the summer when she declined to endorse him, originally saying she planned to remain neutral in the caucuses in keeping with the long-standing tradition of Iowa governors. Mother charged in death of Ida Grove child. Ida Grove. An Ida Grove woman has been arrested and charged with the death of her 3-year-old son in May. Billy Bolzier, 23, is charged with one count of child endangerment resulting in death, a Class B felony that carries a 25-year prison sentence. Bolzier turned herself in on Thursday and was released from custody after posting a $25,000 bond. Her initial appearance is scheduled for Thursday. On May 4th, Bolzier called 911 for first responders to come to her home in Battle Creek because her son, Jordan Reed, was unresponsive. The child was transported to Horn Memorial Hospital in Ida Grove and then to Children's Hospital in Omaha. He was pronounced dead on May 5th, and an autopsy was performed the following day by the Iowa State Medical Examiner's Office. The Ida County Sheriff's Office and Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation launched an investigation into Jordan's death. According to a complaint filed in Ida County District Court, Bolzier told investigators she had driven home, found Jordan slumped over in his car seat when she arrived, and believed he had fallen asleep and strangled on the chest strap of his car seat. The autopsy concluded Jordan died of strangulation, but his injuries were not consistent with Moser's explanation. In a September interview, Moser admitted she had found Jordan hanging from the rear driver's side window, the complaint said, and witness had reported seeing Jordan with his head or upper body out the same window during Moser's drive home from Ida Grove to Battle Creek. Witnesses and videos found on Moser's phone revealed she regularly left Jordan unsecured while driving. Another political story. North Dakota Governor Burgum suspends 2024 campaign. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum announced Monday he would end his campaign to become the 2024 Republican presidential nominee. In a statement on suspending his campaign, Burgum criticized the Republican National Committee's debate structure, saying the fundraising and polling criteria ensure advantages for candidates from major media markets on the coasts versus America's heartland. The RNC's clubhouse debate requirements are nationalizing the primary process and taking the power of democracy away from the engaged, thoughtful citizens of Iowa and New Hampshire, Burgum said. The RNC's mission is to win elections. It is not their mission to reduce competition and restrict fresh ideas by narrowing the field months before the Iowa caucuses or the first in the nation New Hampshire primary. The governor, who launched his campaign in June, campaigned as a candidate who would focus on issues of economy, energy, and national security. He said that Republican presidential candidates needed to focus less on so-called culture war issues like LGBTQ+ subjects and abortion, and talk about policies that impact daily life for Americans. When Burgum entered the race, there were 12 candidates running for the Republican nomination. As he leaves, 6 remain: former President Donald Trump, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson. Though his campaign was not able to gain the traction needed to make the RNC debate stage, Burgum said his candidacy shifted the conversation on America's place in the global economy. Now, just 6 months after our campaign launch, we've elevated the importance of an intelligent energy policy that grows jobs and our economy, reduces inflation, is good for the environment, and, unlike Joe Biden's fantasy green energy plan, stops enabling and empowering our adversaries, specifically China, Russia, Iran, Venezuela, and North Korea, he said. Burgum has served as North Dakota governor since 2016, having grown to prominence after selling his company, Great Plains Software, to Microsoft for $1.1 billion in 2001. While some other candidates have endorsed other presidential candidates on exiting the race, Burgum has not yet offered his support to any other 2024 campaign. He thanked the people he met on the campaign trail and his backers for their support. While this primary process has shaken my trust in many media organizations and political party institutions, it has only strengthened my trust in America, Burgum said. Our nation does not need to be perfect to be exceptional. In community after community along this journey, we witness the best that America has to offer. We'll now move to what looks like to be a regular Tuesday feature. It's five questions with. And today is Siouxland Humane Society Director Jerry Dominic on animal adoptions. I'm not sure how you say his last name. It's spelled Dominick. And today is the questions were asked by Nick Heidrek of the Sioux City Journal. As Christmas nears, some parents may be considering placing a furry bundle of joy under the tree for their children. Before a new pet is added to the family in the form of a Christmas present, parents should give careful consideration to the responsibility the family will be taking on, said Jerry Dominica, executive director of the Siouxland Humane Society. The best time to bring a new pet into the household is when the family has discussed it and they feel it's a good time for a pet to fit into their lifestyle, he said. At one time, the thought of pets being given to children as Christmas presents was not a merry proposition for animal shelters. That thinking has changed, with shelters spending more time on education and adoption counseling as families go through the pet adoption process. A lot of times we have found out that it is a good adoption decision as long as families don't have too much going on during the holiday season, he said. If your Christmas plans include hosting a large family gathering or going out of town for several days, it might be best to wait until after the holidays to bring a new pet into the home. A crowd of strangers could be confusing or stressful to a pet adjusting to new surroundings. Adopting a pet, then leaving it for a family gathering, also could make its transition to a new family harder. Families appear to be giving more thought to those and other considerations, such as how old and responsible their children are, before making a Christmas pet purchase, Dominic said. I think people are beginning to give it a lot more thought before adoption, he said. The journal spoke with him about other Christmastime pet adoption considerations. Question 1. Are pets a common present for kids at Christmas? Not typically, I think, unless the family has already been contemplating a pet and the kids have been wanting one. Question 2. What should parents thinking about giving their kids a pet at Christmas take into consideration? And they answer, the main consideration would be, is it a family decision? Have they discussed who's going to be responsible for taking care of the pet? Are the kids old and responsible enough, and will they be able to care for it? Have they considered all the costs, including vet care? What's a common thing people don't think about when getting a pet for Christmas? That it is a lifelong decision, that your pet should be a member of your family until it passes. And that can be 15 to 20 years. Next question. Are there certain pets that would be better in this situation than others? And the answer is, of course. Movies always show or people always have in mind getting a puppy or a kitten. But a lot of times an adult animal is better. A lot of training such as housebreaking is already done and it's easier for them to adjust. And then the last question. Do you see any changes in adoption numbers during the holiday season? And the answer is, I think adoption numbers slightly go up during the holidays. I think that's partly because surrenders go up at holiday time, and there is a better and more selection at that time. We'll now move on to some quotes that have been in the news in the last week, beginning with one from John Becker, who is a nationally certified line judge for Merrill, who has worked at the NAIA volleyball tournament in Sioux City each year since 2014. And he said, I love being around the game. Standing on the corner is the best seat in the house. And the next one is Brenda Zahner, who is the director of the Iowa State Education Association's bargaining group in Siouxland, on a new state law that bans books with sexual content from public school libraries. And she said, we believe that the free exchange of ideas is a fundamental right in America, and book bans prevent that. And then a quote from Republican Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley in a statement on the prohibition of certain books in school. The sexualization of children in schools does not have a place in Iowa. And then from Matthew Ong, who is the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors chair, about the decision of fellow supervisor Jeremy Taylor not to resign after the conviction of his wife in a federal voting fraud case. And he said, he is doing the public a disservice by not stepping down. And then the next quote is from South Sioux City Police Chief Ed Mahone on the department's use of license plate cameras. And he said, we are not getting into your faces. We're not setting it up in questionable places. We put it in traffic. That's what we use it for. And then Florida Governor and GOP presidential candidate Ron DeSantis, who says as president he would move the headquarters of the U.S. Department of Agriculture to Iowa. And he said, a number of people said that they don't like USDA Washington bureaucrats interfering with how people are farming, and they would much rather have this agency be run with people from their own communities. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, December 5th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. We'll now turn to today's obituaries, beginning with K. Vondrak Hansen, 87, of Remsen, passed away Wednesday, November 15th at her home in Remsen. Private family services will be held at a later date. Arrangements are with the Waxwinkle Funeral Home in Lamars. Ronald Blades, 77, of Sioux City, passed away December 1st at a local hospital. A funeral service will be held at 11:30 a.m. Wednesday, December 6th. Visitation will be at 10:30 a.m. at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Burial will be at the Calvary Cemetery immediately following the service. Dennis T. Dorman, 80, of Sioux City, passed away Friday, December 1st. Funeral service will be 11 a.m. Thursday, December 7th at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Visitation 1 hour prior. Teresa Tess Burinek, 92, of Westfield, Iowa, passed away on Thursday, November 30th, at home surrounded by family. Mass of Christian burial will be at 1 p.m. on Saturday, December 9th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish, St. Patrick's Church in Akron, Iowa. Father Mauro Sanchez will celebrate Mass with Deacon Richard Port assisting. Private family interment will be at the Westfield Township Cemetery. Visitation with the family present will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, December 8th at Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Akron. There will be a scriptural prayer service at 7 p.m. Arrangements are with the Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Akron. Darvin John Hartman, 101, of Hinton, passed away on Monday, December 4th. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, December 8th at Trinity Lutheran Church in rural Hinton. Burial will be at Floyd Valley Cemetery. Visitation at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel on Thursday from 4 to 8 p.m. with the family present from 6 to 8. Prayer service will be at 7 p.m. James R. Jim Kerr, 76, of Sioux City, passed away Wednesday, November 29th. A memorial service will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, December 6th at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Cheryl Getting, 93, of Sanborn, Iowa, passed away November 26th. A memorial service at 2 p.m. on December 8th at the First Reformed Church in Sheldon. Visitation will be at the funeral home from 3 to 7 p.m. December 7th. Burial will be at Roseland Cemetery at 1 p.m. on Friday. The Sanborn Funeral Home is in charge of the arrangements. And that was it for the obituaries for today. Our next story is fatal deer disease outbreak this year could be second worst. An outbreak in Iowa this year of a disease that causes deer to bleed internally and often results in death is poised to be the second worst since the first known outbreak occurred 11 years ago, according to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. I'm not sure if I know how to say this. Epizootic hemorrhagic disease is caused by a virus that is spread by the bites of tiny flies that are informally known as noceums because they are so small, about 1 to 3 millimeters in length. So that disease is abbreviated as EHD. The pesky creatures bite people as well, but the virus is not known to affect humans. So far this year, those bites have resulted in 1,876 suspected EHD deaths in Iowa's white-tailed deer, predominantly in the far southeastern part of the state, said Jace Elliott, the state deer biologist. The disease is not believed to transmit from deer to deer. The virus has infected deer across most of Iowa this year and is the most widespread outbreak documented by the DNR so far. There have been reports of deaths in 76 of the state's 99 counties, and more identifications are possible during the upcoming hunting season in December, when hunters with shotguns canvass wild areas that are less frequently traversed. The reported death toll from the outbreaks is likely to increase during those hunting seasons and surpass the outbreak of 2019, which has slightly more deaths than what have been tallied so far this year, Elliott said. Nearly 3,000 suspected EHD deaths of deer were recorded in 2012, when the disease was first detected in the state. The true number of deaths is likely higher because not all of them are detected. The most obvious signs of EHD infections are dead deer near water, where they are driven by fevers that are associated with the disease. Elliott said outbreaks are generally expected to happen every 3 to 5 years, and weather can play a large role. The tiny fly needs water or wet ground to reproduce, and the disease is more quickly spread when deer congregate near water when it is less available. Last winter was the fourth wettest on record, which led to an abundant soil moisture in southeast Iowa, where most of this year's EHD cases have been recorded. But that area became drier after the spring and is now suffering from significant drought. There were some late summer rains that likely bolstered the fly population, Elliott said, and a warm fall delayed the freezing temperatures that kill the insects, which created an extended opportunity for infections. We have had some killing frost, enough that I would expect that we're 99% done, Elliott said Thursday. I'd be surprised if people were finding fresh deaths at this point. The virus has the potential to infect certain livestock, but no infections have been reported to state ag officials, said Don McDowell, a spokesperson for the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. The deer deaths are not expected to have a large effect on overall hunting this year, but there might be some localized areas that have noticeably fewer deer. This disease can absolutely devastate populations for a landowner or a section of land, Elliott said. The last outbreak in 2019 hit Warren County the hardest, and it took about 2 or 3 years for the deer population to recover, he said. That year stands apart from this year's outbreak because nearly 800 suspected deaths, more than a third of the state total, happened in Warren County. As of November 24th, the southeast counties have the highest totals this year include Van Buren at 182, Henry at 163, Washington at 129, and Davis at 120. Clayton County in northeast Iowa has 130 suspected deaths, but all of its surrounding counties have fewer than 10 or none. There are many other counties across southern Iowa with dozens of suspected deaths. Hunters who encounter dead deer can report them to their local conservation officer or wildlife management staff, Elliott said. The DNR is also soliciting deer tissue samples from hunters to test for chronic wasting disease, a fatal affliction that is entering a phase of growth in Iowa. Nearly 100 deer were found to be infected last year, almost double the number of the previous year. Most of them were in far northeast or south central Iowa, but diseased deer have been identified in western and central Iowa as well. The DNR has confirmed the disease in 4 deer this year, including in Marshall County for the first time. It's common for the state to have fewer than 10 detections leading into the deer shotgun seasons of December, when the majority of tissue samples are obtained, said Tyler Harms, a DNR wildlife research biometrician. Man shot in Sioux City apartment and arrested. An early morning Monday shooting sent a man to the hospital, then to jail in Sioux City. At 2:35 a.m. Monday, Police were dispatched to an apartment building at 17th and Nebraska Street for a report of shots. When officers arrived, they found Wesley John Moniz, 30, with a single shotgun wound to his arm. Moniz was transported to a local hospital for minor injuries. Police officers discovered evidence of the shooting at the scene. According to a news release, Moniz was not cooperating with investigators, refusing to say how or why he was shot. Police discovered Moniz had a warrant for a probation violation. After he was treated for his injuries, he was arrested and transported to the Woodbury County Jail. Sioux City Police search for suspect in homicide. Police are looking for a suspect involved in a homicide that took place in Sioux City late Sunday night. At around 11:58 p.m. Sunday, police were alerted to an incident on the 500 block of 9th Street. Officers arrived on the scene and located a man suffering a single gunshot wound. The victim was pronounced dead at the scene. Investigators conducted a canvas of the area, locating evidence of the shooting. The incident appears to be a targeted incident though the general public is not believed to be in any danger. Anyone with information in the incident can call the Sioux City Police Department at 712-279-6440 or anonymously at 712-258-8477. Mother sues Rosecrans Jackson for negligence in son's death. Sioux City. A mother has filed a negligence lawsuit against a Sioux City drug addiction treatment center, saying the staff's negligence led to her 17-year-old son's fatal drug overdose while staying at the facility. Rebecca Strickland says in the lawsuit that the staff at Rosecrans Jackson Centers failed to search her son's clothing for contraband when he was admitted to the residential treatment facility. Gage Reiner died there on December 16, 2021, of an overdose on a mixture of drugs, including fentanyl, less than 48 hours after his admission. Strickland, who lives in Polk County, Iowa, said staff members failed to perform required overnight bed and safety checks in accordance with state and company policy, resulting in her son's death not being discovered for several hours. The lawsuit says Rosecrans, through its employees, failed to exercise reasonable care to eliminate the dangerous condition or protect Gage as an invitee from the dangerous condition, and its negligence was the cause of Gage's death. Rosecrans communication specialist Lindsay Salvatelli said federal law prohibits the company from conferring or denying whether a person was in its care, and she could not comment on the lawsuit. Reiner was admitted to the Rosecrans residential facility on December 14, 2021, and diagnosed with opioid addiction, other stimulant use, PTSD, and major depressive disorder. According to the lawsuit filed November 27th in Woodbury County District Court, Rosecrans staff told Strickland after her son's death that his clothing had not been searched because of a shortage of male staff members. After participating in therapy and schoolwork the following day, a staff member noted Reiner had become more emotional by 10:28 p.m. and had been punching a bathroom wall, but staff did not intervene. Hours later, a 5:37 a.m. progress report noted that Reiner appeared to sleep soundly through the night without incident. He was found at approximately 7 a.m. face down and fully clothed in his bed. When police arrived shortly after 7 a.m., it was apparent Reiner had died several hours earlier. An autopsy determined Reiner died from a drug overdose involving fentanyl, sertraline, and amphetamine, and the medical examiner found a clear plastic bag containing a crushed fentanyl tablet in his underwear. The lawsuit says there was no documentation that Rosecrans staff members followed their policy of having Reiner remove his clothing for inspection and a body check at the time he was admitted. The lawsuit also says staff did not follow state law that requires 3 bed checks on juveniles in residential facilities between midnight and 6 a.m., or a Rosecrans policy of completing health and safety checks every 15 to 20 minutes. The lawsuit alleges Reiner died after midnight and no bed checks were conducted during the night. Strickland has requested a jury trial and an award for damages to compensate her for her son's loss of estate growth and for her loss of his love, companionship, and affection. Now move to the sports section and a preview for girls basketball for the Missouri River Athletic Conference. Veteran Helen girls team looks to repeat. Since starting 22 games as a freshman for the Bishop Heelan High School girls basketball team during the 2020-21 season, Brooklyn Stanley has played with a lot of different teammates. Now a senior who's back after being named a Class 4A All-State First Teamer, the team is Stanley's ship to steer. "I missed being out on the court with the girls," says Stanley, who led the team in scoring and steals last season. "I'm excited for the new girls. It started really well and everyone's been working hard on their game. When you play with the same girls for so long, you get to know and understand their habits, so we have to figure that out with some newcomers." Heelan has gone 23-3 overall and 13-1 in the Missouri River Athletic Conference two seasons in a row. The Crusaders won the MRAC and reached the Class 4A state tournament both seasons, reaching the semifinals last year. While Heelan ranks 7th in 4A, is primed for another run at a conference title and state tournament berth, the Crusaders are hardly the only team in the MRAC with high expectations. "It's going to take a lot of chemistry and team unity," said Heelan head coach Darren Kustra. "We've got to be a unified team to get to where we want to be. We've got a lot of kids that compete at a high level in a number of sports, and they just bring it from one sport to the next." Despite new players who will have to provide depth, stability, and consistency this season, the Crusaders also have senior point guard Maddie Demke and junior Abby Lee. "We have a lot of new faces this year, but we're connecting pretty well with each other, and our offense is flowing really well," said senior point guard Maddie Demke, a Nebraska Wesleyan hoops and track and field commit. "It's a little nerve-wracking working new players in, but it's been going very well. As a senior, I've been trying to make sure the underclassmen are doing okay, even away from the court, in the classroom, and even just being there for them as a friend." Sioux City East was just a game behind Heelan last season in the conference standings and brings back an impressive, talented roster, and Lamar's is well-stocked as well. "I'm pumped," says Stanley. "I think a lot of people have lowered expectations for us because of what we lost from last year, but I think we're going to surprise some people." The Crusaders certainly are off on the right foot with a 2-0 start, including a win over conference co-favorite Sioux City. For more on the Black Raiders and the rest of the MRAC, here's a team-by-team breakdown. Sioux City East Black Raiders. Senior Alexandra Flattery is a third-team All-Stater last year, and East boasts more players who could earn that status when this season comes to a close. Sophomore Trishelle Miller is back after garnering first-team All-Conference status in the MRAC as a freshman and garnering Division I attention on the recruiting circuit after she led the conference in scoring at 20.3 points per game and was second in assists per contest. The Black Raiders went 17-5 last season overall and 12-2 in the MRAC. To open the 23-24 slate, East dominated Spencer with Miller out and Flattery, a Nebraska Kearney commit, only scoring 12 points. Instead, the Black Raiders relied on sophomore twins Hudson and Haven Ranshaw in its opener. Hudson scored 33 points and grabbed 6 rebounds and added 5 assists and 4 steals plus a block, while Haven went for 20 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, and 2 steals. While East may pose problems for opposing defensive with all their scoring options, the Black Raiders' athleticism will serve them well on the defensive end as well. Senior Eliana Harris, a state champion sprinter on the track, was among the MRAC leaders in block shots last season, averaging 1 per game. Lamar's Bulldogs. The Bulldogs may have their hands full trying to compete against Heelan and East for a conference title, but even if Lamar's falls short in that regard, this could be the season for Lamar's to make a run at the Class 4A state tournament. Whether Lamar's can contend for a conference title or not, it could earn the right to be the top seed in a region, unlike the recent past when the Bulldogs have had to go through Heelan in the postseason. A season split or better in the two games against the Crusaders in the regular season would go a long way in proving to the IGHSAU that both may be worthy of a top regional seed in 4A. As of Monday, both Lamar's and Heelan are ranked inside the top 10. Senior Meta Skov is back after appearing on the All-MRAC's first team last winter after she averaged 14.3 points a game last season. Junior Jalen Marino also stands to continue her ascension as one of the conference's best players. Marino leads the Bulldogs in scoring through two games at 22 points per game while shooting 56% from the field and has converted 9 of 14 attempts from three-point range. Our team model this season is unfinished business, which speaks for itself, said first-year head coach Sidney Baumgartner, a Lamar's alum. We have a very experienced team that has played a lot of basketball together. We are excited to see how well we compete in the MRAC and in our non-conference play this season. Sioux City Wolverines. The Wolverines opened the season ranked 15th in Class 5A, but dropped out in the second set of rankings after opening the season with a loss to Cherokee, a team that entered the 4A poll with the win. West has the pieces to recover and pop back into the rankings as Kia Davis returns after making the All-MRAC first team as a junior, when she averaged 15.3 points per game. Returning juniors Vera Grum and Hannah Berg also averaged double figures, and Kimber Boomen was only a point shy of joining that group as a sophomore. We should have a good year this year, said head coach Betsy Boltker, who is in her 14th at the helm of the Wolverines. We have four returning starters. They have played a lot of basketball together. West went 11-13 overall and 6-8 in the MRAC last season. While the conference slate is somewhat of a gauntlet this season, if health is on the Wolverine side, last year's mark should represent a floor to what this season's team is capable of. Sergeant Bluff Luton Warriors. The Warriors will have as much to make up for as any team in the MRAC after losing graduates from last season, including Class 4A All-State second teamer Peyton Hardy. Senior Camia Van Kalsbeek put up a 16-point, 10-rebound double-double in SBL season opening loss to Lamar's. The future is bright beyond this season, though. SBL starts Van Kalsbeek alongside two juniors, Jaden Kneifel and Addison Wheeler, and two sophomores, Bree Vandentop and Bailey Moreau. Our goal is get better as the season goes along and playing best basketball at the end, said first-year head coach Matt Britton. Sioux City North Stars. North was second to last in the MRAC last winter after finishing 4-18 overall and 2-12 inside the conference. The Stars graduated their top three scorers of last season in Sydney Rexius, Hannah Morganson, and Gabby Eberle. However, North did get some reinforcements in the form of a talented group of underclassmen and senior Sydney Chamberlain, a Dakota Wesleyan volleyball commit who returns to the hoops team after not going out last winter. Chamberlain did see some time on the varsity as a sophomore. The Stars roster also includes five freshmen and sophomores. While that group may take some lumps this season, it may do the program some good in the future. That group includes Hayden Lovren, Jaden Brower, Morgan Beebun, and Kinsley Walwold, all among others. Senior Natalie Rasmussen is the top returning scorer for the Stars. She averaged 4.5 points a game. She also averaged the same number of rebounds per contest. We are looking to compete in games, third-year head coach Angie Christensen said. We lost so much from our scoring last year, so everyone has a different role for us. We want to improve each time out. We are not focusing on wins or losses, but just taking it one day at a time to be better than the day before. And we'll now move to Dear Abby, and we begin with this letter. Dear Abby, a woman where I work refuses to acknowledge me. Every day for the past 9 months, she walks by my desk and ignores me even after I've said hello or good morning. I hate to seem petty, but I don't get how someone can be so rude. Has workplace culture become so impersonal that people no longer have or employ basic social skills? It costs nothing to say hello or to smile. It's the least she could do. Signed, Feeling Invisible in Louisiana. And Abby responds, of course the woman's behavior is rude and even somewhat hostile. You might ask her if you have offended her in some way and see what kind of reply you receive. I agree that there has been a general decline in basic good manners over the last 10 years. However, one never knows what burdens those we encounter might be carrying. Depression, anger, and stress can affect the way we treat others. My advice would be not to take this personally, and because you know she's not open to exchanging social amenities, to stop what you have been doing. Dear Abby, 4 years ago, I lost my husband of 20 years. After it happened, I told his younger brother, whom he was closest to, that I was going to write about him. However, some things have stopped me. I lost a dog 6 months ago and watched her follow a similar path as my late husband, which hurt me deeply. The other reason is I believe his family may not want to know the truth. His brother thinks my husband was a great man. He did have good qualities, but he wasn't the saint his brother thinks he was. He was emotionally abusive, and he raped me numerous times. He often yelled at our dog for simple things, and he wasn't faithful either. So, should I write the story they don't want to hear? Signed, penned in hand in Texas. And Abby responds, they say the pen is mightier than the sword, but if you want to continue to interact with these former in-laws, refrain from the temptation to use it to cut their brother down to size. That does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, December 5th. I am your reader, Dagna. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Ready.
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing. It really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.